The reason why I started Life Buyers Edge here was because I saw a lot of people, property investors in particular, looking to buy in regional Queensland in the markets that I was very familiar with, markets that I've been very intimately involved in over the course of my life. And a lot of them I felt as though lacked a lot of key insight about the marketplace and about some of the suburbs, about some of the better performing assets, to the extent that, you know, a lot of them made a lot of buying decisions that were non-favorable to their goals and property aspirations, meaning they lost money or never made money at all. So I saw that there was an urgent need for buyers that needed someone on the ground to hold their hand and guide them through the marketplace and connect them with the better opportunities in the marketplace, the better quality assets that ultimately get them closer to where they want to be in terms of their different property related goals.
Welcome to Get Invested on the Property Hub podcast channel, the leading weekly show to help you unlock your full self, health, and wealth potential. I'm your host, Bushy Martin, and each week I go deep with the best investors, experts, leaders, and founders to find out what it takes to break free from the grind, discover freedom, and live by design. Subscribe now and join me and get invested in the life you really want. Let's get started.
Hi, Freedom Fighters. How did you buy your last property? And how are you thinking about buying your next? Are you going to do it yourself, or will someone help you? And would you consider using a buyer's agent? And if so, how can you ensure that you get a good one? If you've been tuned into the Property Hub for any length of time, you'll know that I'm a big believer that sustainable success in property is actually an elite team sport. And you're only as good as the weakest link in your team. And sadly, for many property buyers, the weakest member is often themselves, the person that's staring back at them in the mirror, but they just don't realise it. The simple fact of the matter is that if you don't have the considerable time, experience, expertise and skills required to search, select and successfully negotiate a property purchase, then don't kid yourself that you can do this major transaction the justice that it actually deserves just on your own. Just because you live in a house doesn't mean you know how to buy an outperforming investment property. In reality, this delusion only gives you enough knowledge and false confidence to be a danger to yourself. So let me share a very quick analogy. If you are looking to win the State of Origin Rugby League Final against the Blues, or the AFL Grand Final against Richmond, or the Ashes Cricket Series against England, or the National Netball Competition against the Diamonds, you wouldn't just rock up as an occasional part-timer and as a bit of a legend in your own lunchtime and by yourself take on the professional full-time skill of the other teams and expect to win. Yet, this is exactly what most property investors and buyers actually do. Many try and go it alone. But if you're really serious about wanting to outperform, you get the best possible players in each and every position that all understand each other's position and style of play and how they need to combine to achieve your overall game strategy, to ensure they're collectively kicking your goals and helping you win both your property game and your lifestyle season. Now, in this context, you're not a player. More importantly, you're the owner and manager of your elite property team, where your role is to set the strategy and then together with your head coaches of your property strategist, savvy mortgage broker and accountant, like our Know How Property team, you need to do this to keep the rest of your professional property team honest and accountable. So your role is then to define the end game and manage your managers, because unless you're an expert, you shouldn't be a player. This is a bit of a false economy and a delusion that gets many property investors into trouble, and most of them don't even realise it. Now, I'm no exception. I didn't trust anyone when I first started in property, so I tried to reinvent the wheel on my own, and I ended up making a heap of mistakes that I didn't even know that I was making at the time, because I just didn't know what I didn't know, until I learned the benefits of surrounding myself with independent and proven property professionals in each and every key position. I then progressively made sure that everyone in my property team was better at their specialist position than I was. But I also invested in my knowledge and kept learning enough and continuously asking questions to make sure I knew enough to keep them all honest. Now, I'm not for a moment suggesting that you totally outsource your property portfolio and your future wealth by handballing it to others, because no one's going to care as much about your money and your property as you do. But the trick is to ensure that you invest in continuously growing your knowledge and becoming familiar enough with each and every aspect of the property process over time so that you're the owner, leader, and performance manager of your elite property professional team. And listening to our Property Hub and other great podcasts is a great way to help you do this. So you're already off to a good start, because there isn't an episode where I don't learn something from our great guests, even though I've been intimately involved in property for nearly 45 years now, so I'm really showing my age there. Now, you may also like to register for our Freedom Formula Fight series and of education and information sessions, where I share the key property principles and the why, what, and how of property. So if this is of interest, just click on the link in the show notes at bushymartin.com.au/Freedom Formula Course to take your knowledge to the next level. Now, one of the most important and pivotal players in your property team, particularly when you're starting out, will be a good, professional, and proven buyer's agent. And the emphasis here is on good and proven, because like any rapidly growing profession, the barriers to entry are generally pretty low, and they tend to attract early on gold diggers chasing the quick bucks who move from being spray painters or hairdressers yesterday, not that there's anything wrong with either of those professions, to being buyer's agents today, which is where their lack of experience and expertise can end up costing you dearly in the long term. But a proven professional buyer's agent can be actually worth their weight in gold when it comes to sustainable property performance. So how can you avoid the time, stress, headache, and potential risk of buying a property yourself, which you'll be interested to know, on average takes you over 7 months and 90 hours of your precious time, spread over an average of at least 12 properties and making over 6 offers. And even then, the likelihood that you've secured the best property for your needs is actually pretty slim, because you just don't have the time or expertise. And chances are you'll join the 42% of property buyers who feel overwhelmed by the process and end up compromising on the property you end up buying just due to continual frustration, with 13% of buyers feeling like they paid too much and 28% feeling heartbroken they didn't actually end up getting their ideal property, which was according to a Home.com survey. So what's the answer? A good, proven, and professional buyer's agent. Your valuable time, your money, and your future wealth is just not worth trying to buy DIY, particularly for first or second time property buyers, or for those that are only buying property occasionally every 2 to 3 years. What you buy and where you buy it are absolutely mission critical to your immediate and long-term success, not just how much you buy the property for. For example, if you're going for growth, and just a 3% difference in the growth rate between two different locations will add more than $800,000 to your nest egg on a $400,000 property purchase over 20 years. Now that's a 75% increase just by buying the right property in the right location, because 80% of the growth comes from the location, not from the property itself. It's for this reason that I've interviewed and continue to interview buyer's agents on the show, because I want to help you to learn the ins and outs of the property buying process, and to expose you to a range of buyer's agents who will ultimately help you to identify the right approach for you, as well as the right buyer's agent to suit you, who's not only experienced and expert at what they do, but just as importantly, are the right fit for you. Because you need to listen to your gut intuition on this, because a buyer's agent or other property professional may be the best in class, but if your highly tuned BS indicator is going off like a Geiger counter near a nuclear reactor, then you need to honour this and go with your gut. Everyone's different, so you need to keep looking until you find a professional that not only does right, but feels right, and is aligned with your values, your goals, and your personality. Now, if you need help in selecting the best buyer's agent and rejecting the rest, feel free to email us at hello@knowhowproperty.com.au. That's hello@knowhowproperty.com.au, which we'll include in the show notes. And also put in the subject header questions to ask before engaging a buyer's agent. And we'll email you the copy of the 37 questions that our Know How team asked potential buyer's agents to decide if they're worthy of further consideration. Because it's all about getting a good, proven professional buyer's agent who's an expert and specialist in their location and the property type. And today's guest is another example. Troyson Bassani is the founder and head of research at Life Buyers Agency, who specialise in securing property in the north, central and southeast Queensland regional property markets, which are actually opportunity areas that are getting a lot of increased attention in recent times. To date, Troyson and his Life Buyers Agency have helped secure over $150 million worth of property across the central Queensland region for both interstate, interstate and international buyers. So this week we're going to dig into Troyson's personal journey, and then next week we're going to deep dive into the pros and cons of regional markets and the role of buyers agents in these areas. So welcome, and let's get invested, Troyson.
Well, Sheath, thank you for having me. I'm super excited.
Yeah, likewise too, mate. I've sort of been quietly behind the scenes tracking what you're up to in your neck of the woods. Troyson, for those who don't know much about you at this point in time, can you sort of kick things off by sharing what you do differently and, most importantly, why you do what you do?
Hey, what I do differently? Well, I suppose I'll start off with why first, and then I'll get to why and what I'm doing differently. So why I do what I do, which is help, what I essentially do is I help property buyers, investors and home buyers navigate the regional Queensland property market. That's what I do. And why I do that is over the years before my time in real estate and before I became a buyer's agent and operated the business that I have to date, I saw many investors and home buyers find it difficult to navigate the regional property market. And in fact, many of them lost money. Many of them have a lot of regret. And many of them have bought secondary assets, you know, and missed out on the opportunity that comes with buying, you know, the better quality assets in this marketplace. And this is just something that I've observed over my time, just having, you know, visibility of, you know, what properties are being purchased in different marketplaces, what people are talking about in different forums as part of, you know, what are hotspot areas and what people, you know, are talking about around the friends and with friends and family at the barbecue table. You know, I've just come to see that there was a huge shortfall a lot of property investors had when buying property in regional Queensland. So I thought, hey, let's create a service offering that adds value to a lot of these people looking to buy property in this marketplace and hopefully, you know, alleviate some of the downside risk that comes with that. But at the same time, while we mitigate that downside risk, find ways to maximize the upside potential. And by us holding people's hand through the marketplace and connecting them with the better quality assets, we believe that creates the upside potential needed for someone to get ahead in their property journey.
Yeah, I love that, Troyson. Where I always like to start with these conversations, Troyson, is to do a bit of reader's digest of your life journey so far. So I'd like to sort of circle back as far as you'd like to go and talk us through what you've invested your time, energy, and money in over the years and why. And how has this then led you to where you are and what you're doing today?
Well, funny enough, I am someone that Alex Formosi would say that has invested in the SME 500, not the S&P 500. I've spent a lot of time developing myself and you know, fine-tuning my craft, becoming a master in my field, or trying to master the art of what I do today. But you know, prior to going into real estate, I did graduate from university in Cairns and Far North Queensland with a double degree in business management and entrepreneurship. So I have a very entrepreneurial spirit. And in fact, prior to getting into real estate, I attempted to do a number of other business ventures that didn't work out just because I was entrepreneurial in nature. So I went off to university, completed a double degree, and then went into the corporate world and spent a bit of time in tourism, in fact, where I worked for a big, you know, Australian tourism operator, spent a lot of time traveling the world in the sales field and tried to pitch the tourism product we have and get on the ITOs, itineraries for inbound tour operators or FIT travelers that were traveling to Australia. So I spent a lot of time doing that, and that time really built my network in the corporate world, but at the same time, really fine-tuned a lot of the marketing, sales, and branding skills that I feel as though I didn't get from university. Even though I did a business degree, I felt that, you know, what I learned out in the real world, really just built on what I've learned at university. So I spent a bit of time in sales and tourism, and then I actually went into corporate finance. So I spent a number of years working as an analyst in corporate finance for an Indigenous private equity firm in Cairns. And what we would do is basically acquire small business ventures, and we would go out and raise capital to then scale them up. So the goal would be to 4X or 10X the turnover of those assets, and obviously provide returns to our investors that invested in those businesses. So my job was to look for those opportunities and then obviously raise the capital as well. So behind the scenes, doing the financial plans, the business plans, and the, putting together the pitch and the value proposition to pitch to investors. And yeah, we've got a number of, over the years, book businesses off the ground up north in far north Queensland. We bought a long mining business that we scaled to, basically a tier one civil construction business over a 5-year period. And now that's building bridges, but from, doing mining launch to, building bridges in the space of 5 years. And we 15X their turnover over that time period as well, which was really good. I actually then went off and after I finished the work, spent a bit of time playing semi-professional rugby league. So I spent a bit of time playing in the Queensland Cup here in Queensland, and would travel all around the state playing semi-professional rugby league. And I think that really set me up and learning the discipline of what it takes to be a successful athlete or to be in a high-performing team. And I found a lot of those things that I did in the semi-professional rugby league space was really transferable into business. And even to this day, a lot of those habits are still in me, where, maintaining, an equilibrium between, health and lifestyle and well-being, all of those were the key things that affect how you perform on the rugby league field, also affects how you perform in business. So I've really adopted a lot of what I've learned in playing semi-professional rugby league over the years and implemented that into my business. Unfortunately, that didn't work out. I had aspiration to be a professional athlete. I really wanted, my goal all it was as a kid was to play for the North Queensland Cowboys. Having grown up in North Queensland, I looked up to people like Matty Bowen, Jonathan Thurston over the years, and always wanted to put on a Cowboys jumper, but I was never good enough to get there. But what it actually, what footy actually done for me was, at the time when I was very interested in pursuing a professional career, I had a couple of really nasty injuries. So there was a few setbacks. I actually done my knee. So I ended up doing my knee, had a complete completely torn ACL, had a knee reconstruction, decided to go through the rehab process, a small setback for a big comeback. And then the following season, I broke my tib and fib. So now I have 17 screws and 2 titanium plates in my ankle. So at the age of 26, my rugby league career was all but over. And at that time, it was almost a blessing in disguise, because I really developed, I suppose, a more abundant mindset of, wanting to achieve more things in life. I wanted to have financial freedom. And at the time, while I was injured, I started to whet my appetite at property and learning the game of property, learning the game of finance, learning the game of abundance. And that's where, coming in and listening to the people like yourself over the years and others in this space to really build my knowledge base and my appetite to then, test the waters. And property was always a huge passion of mine. In fact, my initial goal was that I wanted to be a property developer. Aside from, going out and tackling the corporate world and being an entrepreneur, I really had aspirations to be a property developer. But when I looked into the world of property and the world of becoming a property developer, the first thing I noticed was that, number one, you needed to have cash in bank, and number two, you needed to have a large asset base to leverage from. And at the time, I didn't have either, and I thought property was going to be the right vehicle to help me get to where I want to be one day, which is being a developer. I'm not there yet, but the journey to date has led me to be not far off that as we speak. But aside from the university and the corporate experience and the real world jobs that I've had, I've also spent a lot of time in professional developments. I've invested in Bob Anderson was my mentor for a couple of years. Ben Handler was my mentor for a couple of years. I've done public speaking courses. I've done financial modeling courses. I've probably spent outside of university an additional $50,000 or $60,000 in professional development, just investing in myself to get to a point where I've now have enough value that I can offer to other people and charge a fee for.
Yeah, I love that. And again, you're warming my heart because I'm a lot older than you are and I'm still learning every day, Troyson. And that's going to be a lifetime journey for me because it keeps you sharp. There's always something you can learn from someone else. And I love the energy that you have to keep pushing you forward. And I can see why you would have been a good rugby player because the patience and the persistence and the daily habits where you need to continuously challenge yourself against others to perform in that very competitive environment. I can see there's a spirit there with you that is a burning fire, Troyson. And that in itself is quite motivational and inspirational to others. But a couple of things, because you unpacked a lot that you just shared with us, there's a couple of things I wouldn't mind honing in on if we can. You mentioned briefly that there was a couple of businesses when you sort of dived into the entrepreneurial world that didn't work. Because I often find that we learn more from our challenges, our problems and our issues than we do the successes. Can you sort of unpack a little bit that for us, what happened and what you took away from them?
Yeah, so probably the first business that I had was more of a novelty thing. It was like, this was what I was passionate about at the time, and I was passionate about rugby league, and I saw a need for, I suppose, casual rugby league attire. So I spent about 6 months really developing business where we would create casual rugby league attire, like polo shirts, pocket shirts, casual pants, because I found that when people would go to games, you'd have the diehard rugby league fans that wear the colours, you know, the scarves and what have you, but then you'd have your more subtle fans, and you'd have, I suppose, more I felt there's the difference generally between white collar professionals, how they support their team, and the blue collar professionals. I found that the blue collar families and the blue collar supporters, they're all like, will wear their colors, you know, and wear the, you know, the heart on their sleeve sort of thing. But whereas the white collar professionals, they were more subtle with what they know, that dress nice and classy, boots, Aaron Williams shoes, and a nice casual polo shirt. So I thought, if I could create a product that would appeal to that market, yeah, I thought it would get some really good traction, like really nice World Cup polo shirts, like what they do over in the States, you know, and then you'd cater for that sort of market, and have it obviously well finished, tailored, really high end material. And at that time, I went down a rabbit hole, and as I said, spent about 6 months in this venture, and I really fell over when I got to, because I was very, I'm a creative person, right? And I like to think about the future, and I try and bring the future into the present, but I think where I lacked was then when it got to the nitty-gritty around the product itself. Like, I saw what the product was capable of and the value proposition it had in the marketplace and who was the ideal client for it. But what I wasn't able to do and execute was getting the product, like, you know, finding the suppliers, going through the process of tailoring, you know, that the quality of it, you know, figure out what's the best bottom, what's the best, you know, cut, all of that sort of things where I really fell over. So when I look back and I think about that time, I probably would have been someone that would have really benefited from someone who has done that business before me. You know, someone who's done an apparel business or streetwear or clothing business to really lean on their knowledge to find out, well, I've got an amazing idea. I've conceptualized it. I know it could potentially work, but creating the product itself is where I fell over, and that was a big one.
Yeah, well, I think the good news there for me is that, firstly, you've got the creativity to identify the opportunity, which, again, a lot of people don't. But more importantly, because ideas are cheap, actually, you had the mental fortitude and the persistence to actually make something happen and take some action towards doing that. And that pretty much trims out 95% of people who come up with great ideas. But I also admire the fact that you got to a point of recognizing, hey, this isn't going to work. So rather than continue to bash your head against a brick wall and get a blood nose, but also recognizing the need, what I'm hearing with what you've shared with a number of your experiences so far is the need to surround yourself with people who've either done it and also can communicate it to you and are open to sharing that with you so that you can then learn from that and navigate the pathway much more effectively. So some really good learnings there, mate, and it tells me a lot about you in relation to the resilience that you bring to the table and your focus on making that happen. On a similar line to that, I just want to dive into that time when we had those injuries during rugby, because I can imagine that would be very crushing to you, because you had this vision of a future playing professional rugby and everything that goes with that. To have those dreams shattered and pulled away from you very suddenly, really, I'd imagine would have been crushing to your soul. Can you talk us through how you're feeling at that time, and then what was it that gave you the ability to rise above that and then pursue something else without that hamstringing you for the rest of your life? Because I've seen a lot of Aussies who all hit a wall like that and they almost fold over and give up and then just sort of saunter through life without really taking advantage of the fantastic opportunity we enjoy in the greatest country in this planet. Can you share with us some of that? Because I think there's a lot of learnings in that as well.
Yeah, well, Wushi, I was one that generally, like someone who wants to pursue a professional rugby league career will generally be a high school superstar. They'd be identified by rugby league club or an AFL club, soccer club, whatever their chosen sport would be. And then from there, they go into pathways and academies. And generally, they're in the system and play an elite level, by 20 years old.
Yeah.
So I decided after school to put education first. Yep. So I went out after school and really focused on getting my degrees. And that was my priority at the time. I played a little bit of rugby league just sort of for fun on the weekends, but that was my priority at the time. And then when I went out and after I finished university, got a job, and I was like, oh, well, I want to try and give footy another crack. And by then I was sort of early 20s, 23, 24, and started playing local rugby league up in Queensland. And from there, I really took it serious, like really focused on, how I perform each week, preparation for games, getting my body right, mentally right. And I found I was getting results on the rugby league field where individually I was performing very well. And then from there, I started to capture the attention of the semi-professional rugby league clubs. And those semi-professional rugby league clubs offered me opportunities to go and play for them. And meanwhile, I was doing this at the time, just playing local rugby league in Queensland, all in a very cushy corporate job. I was earning in excess of $120,000 a year. I was well educated. I was one that probably had great aspiration to do things in the corporate world as well. And I did have aspiration to achieve things there. Yeah. But I really needed to scratch the itch that I had, which was I needed to try and at least give rugby league one more crack. And I actually quit my full-time job I had in the corporate world. I relocated my family and my wife and my young boy from North Queensland to Central Queensland and Rockhampton to pursue a rugby league career. And I went from a $120,000 job down to working for one of our corporate partners that were one of the sponsors for the club that I was with, which was Central Queensland Capras. And they had a partner sponsor called the Endeavour Foundation. So I spent a couple of years working as a support worker, as a disability support worker. And I really enjoyed my time there, working with a lot of people that I suppose that didn't get the same cards dealt with, the cards dealt that we got dealt, unfortunately. But that really, at the time, I suppose, when I did get my injuries, gave me perspective, right? The people that I worked with really gave me perspective on life to show that, hey, I've got a busted knee or hey, I've got a broken leg, but it could be much worse, right? Because I didn't have to look far to see, what bad cards other people have been dealt in life.
Yeah.
And that really gave me the perspective needed to just go, just get over it, Troy. You could be worse off. Yeah. Still quit crying your soup, And to be honest, it was a blessing in disguise because it allowed me to focus on real estate and probably doing something that was my true purpose, which was, helping people in this space. But when I think about it, how I felt at the time was, yeah, I was shattered. You know, obviously, I upped and moved my family. I quit a job that I was going really well at. I had big money to make this jump, right? And you know, you always hear these cliche stories about people, you know, having a crack and just putting themselves in a position to win, and then they go on to do these great things. But, you know, I didn't end up with the cliche story. But, that, you know, when I think about it, that's all right, you know, because when I think about that more deeply, which, yeah, I'm actually grateful that I did spend the 4 years doing my university degree, getting my education out of the way, because then I had something that I didn't have something that would fall back on, but I had capability to then, you know, dig myself out of the hole that I was in. Whereas I find a lot of young people, you know, particularly those who pursue a career in sport, they don't have that capability to start a business or to you know, get a good corporate job after they've, you know, become injured or you know, had some things that didn't work out well in life. So I was lucky in that sense.
Yeah, I love that, mate. It's something that I would also like to touch on, because I've had the real privilege and pleasure of working closely with a number of Indigenous people over the years, and some of them are my best friends, mate. I worked in Central Australia and Alice Springs and Darwin for a long time, and what I really enjoyed there was that, and you know, I don't want to generalise here, but there is an ability of Indigenous people to see things very differently from others. There's almost a spiritual awareness and an intuition that is embedded in your or psyche, in your bones, at a level that's way beyond anything that we see in the European descendants that now inhabit a big part of the country. I'd love for you to share how that's worked for you and how that's distinguished what you do in relation to what you've done and what you're now doing.
Yeah, when I was playing sports, it was like a sixth, what was it, an Aberdeen instinct to me, a five or six. Yeah, it was like an additional instinct, you know, where I could see things sort of playing out before they, you know, were even ruled in real time, you know, before they happened. So that allowed me to really excel in the sporting arena, was that additional instinct that I found.
Yeah.
But that heightened awareness, which, you know, I think it's really transferable in business now as well, like, okay, that heightened awareness that I think is ingrained in our bones as Indigenous Australians to look for the good in people, but look for it's a really good bullshit detector.
yeah, exactly.
Well, detector where,
yeah,
you know, we're able to just have a really sense what how people feel and what their intent is just by engaging with them. And I think that's where that additional sense or that, you know, built-in instinct comes from. Our 60,000 years ingrained in my bones. It's just that state of consciousness.
Yeah,
and it's really helped me identify wankers. That's been a really good bullshit detector.
Beautifully said, mate. You know, my life partner Sonia, she's not Indigenous, but she has the same sort of quality, and I find it's a very rare quality. She can almost by osmosis just sense the good from the bad, and within 3 seconds of meeting someone, she can tell me whether they're people that we're spending time with. Whereas I sort of whether I've become blind to it or I'm just not as in tune with that intuition as she is. But it's a skill and a quality that I think is underrated, and has the sort of subliminal potential to mean big things. And what you're doing and what you're achieving is first-hand example of that, Troyce, and there's no question about it. So really appreciate you sharing that, mate. And I guess it's sort of allied to that to some degree. I'd love for you to share, you know, what elements of your upbringing generally across the board have had the biggest influence on who you are and who you've become.
Well, I grew up in a small Indigenous community, right? And to be honest, I believe I won the parent lottery, in this Indigenous community, because I come from a place where 90% of the population is unemployed and, you know, is scraping the bottom of the, barrel of the socio and economic spectrum here in Australia. You know, I suffered from abject misery and squalor, but I was one of the ones that I believe won the parent lottery because my parents were working class. You know, I'll probably say your average middle class family, but just happened to be located, you know, in the discrete Indigenous community. Because, and that really set me up, I believe, you know, for a good life. And me looking back at my upbringing, I had food on the table, I had a roof over my head, I had a shirt on my back. You know, on the weekends, I wasn't getting up to mischief. I was out in the boat fishing, hunting, camping. So from an upbringing point of view, I had a magical upbringing, you know, and being Indigenous as well, you're not only part of your immediate family, but you're part of the community and you're part of a large extended family. So, you know, me spending a lot of time with my cousins growing up, you know, creeks and in the bush, chasing birds with shanghais, I remember all of those things. And I think what that allowed me to do, that upbringing really allowed me not to have any baggage as an adult. I think I went through my teenage years and my adulthood now with no baggage, no emotional damage, no baggage that will really shape how I think and how I feel. So when I went out into the real world, I didn't have this baggage that was sort of, you know, this dark stain on really holding me back. So I was very proactive. I was very, I looked at things optimistically and not pessimistically, and I always then looked at things from a place of abundance and not from a place of scarcity, because I think I grew up in an abundant home that made me feel like I had abundance, and that really played a critical role in shaping my life. But when I look back, I certainly do believe that I did win the parent lottery, because people that have the life that I have are meant to, from where I'm from. You know, obviously, the unemployment rates, the life expectancy, the health issues, you know, that's really plaguing Indigenous Australians. And the majority of people that I grew up with, unfortunately, haven't had the same trajectory that I have. But when I look back at it and reflect on it, it's because I believe I just won the parent lottery in my community, and that's really shaped me to be there.
Yeah, I love it, mate. I really appreciate you sharing that, because, you know, sitting here and talking with you, your energy and vibration is very infectious, and you know that I get to very occasionally meet people like you that are quite magnetic in that context, because there's a burning fire inside that is going to ignore any external influences, because you're focused on where you're heading and what you need to do to get there, mate. So I love that fire within. Something else that I'd like to sort of touch on briefly is, because every one of us has struggles in life, mate. I still do, by the way. Given everything you've done and doing, is there anything at all that you struggle with, and what is it, and how are you looking to overcome it?
Well, I think this is just the creative side of my brain, Bushy. The entrepreneurial side of my brain. One of the things I really struggle with, and my wife hates this about me, to be honest, and she's really good at fixing this problem of mine. I think it is a problem of mine, which is I find it very hard to be present. You know, it's like I really struggle with, I believe, because I'm always thinking about 1-2 years down the track, 3 years, 4 years, thinking I need to achieve this, I need to achieve that. You know, I become so focused on, you know, the event or the outcome rather than focusing on the here and now. And you know, perfect example would be my wife. I said, "Oh, Troy, you know, your son is winning an award at school. You know, do you want to go?" And I'm like, "Oh, I totally forgot about that." You know, like, I've got all these things on my calendar of what I need to do, business, you know, personal development. But here I was not, you know, putting in this most important thing, which was, you know, my being there for being present when my son was winning in a school-based award. So I find that that's one of my biggest struggles, is being present, being in the here and now. But You know, my wife is one of those people where she is very present. She's not a big picture thinker. She is always living in the now, and she's really, really reined in it and really brings me back into the present. And yeah, if I can put it down to the biggest thing I struggle with is being present. Because she, I don't know, it's just maybe just the type of person and how I'm hardwired, the creative brain that I have. And obviously when you're in the game of property, you're always looking towards the future of what markets are going to do, how assets are going to perform. So I've built in these ingrained habits, I think, as well. And they can often be bad habits when you have other...
Well, good and bad. I think the key thing there, because listening to you, you and I are very similar, mate. I used to be an architect, so I'm always creating the future and always got a vision of what the future looks like. And like you, my good wife, Sonia, slaps me around and keeps me in the present. And it's that synergy between both of you that I think creates a better whole for everyone. And your kids are going to benefit from that because I think you actually need both. I don't think either is wrong. It's just you've come together and it's that play interplay between you that creates a better result at the end of the day. And what a great foil to have someone there who's able to sort of bring you back to the here and now and so you can enjoy the journey and not always be focused on the destination. So I love you sharing that, mate. I now want to turn to your and my favourite subject, which is property. And I want to talk a bit about your property journey. So I'd be interested in starting with, you know, why did you decide to think about property and what triggered your interest, if you can?
So what initially triggered my interest was that where I grew up, right, they have a home ownership rate. Indigenous Australians have a home ownership rate of about 1 or 2%.
Wow. Right?
And in the Indigenous community where I grew up, 99% of the housing that is there is Department of Public Works. It is public housing. It is state and federally owned. So not a lot of people have, you know, the Australian dream of owning their own home. Yep. And none of them have an access or pathway to own their home as well. And that's obviously a state government and federal government failure in terms of Indigenous policy and development around home ownership and the provision of housing. But that's another topic altogether. But
yeah,
that's where my interest came from, Bushy, was that I saw a need for there to be Indigenous home ownership, right? And I saw an appetite for Indigenous home ownership in Indigenous communities across Australia, because there are a lot of people that are working. There are a lot of families that are doing quite well.
Yep.
A lot of people that are, you know, basically middle-class families, but living here in public housing.
Yep.
But there is no pathway to home ownership. So my initial interest came from, well, someone needs to solve this problem, right? Someone needs to come up with an ecosystem or a way to a pathway for Indigenous Australians to become homeowners in their own discrete communities. And I remember when I spent a bit of time in the private equity company I was working for, it was actually a subsidiary organization to one of Noel Pearson's companies.
So okay.
Noel Pearson, founded Capital Partnerships.
Yep.
So Capital Enterprise, the Indigenous private equity division, was a subsidiary company to that.
Yep.
But I was lucky enough to be associated with a lot of people at a policy level, you know, corporate level within his organization. Yep. And I remember sitting one day around a table and we were talking about Indigenous home ownership. And I was just, you know, part of the conversation. And one of the, you know, big policy conversations that came up was that we need more Indigenous property developers. You know, I think if we have more Indigenous property developers, that could really solve the problem here, because they could, you know, number one, identify the opportunities where there are primes for development. Number two, create product. And number three, connect customers with the product, right?
Totally.
And what we did is that, and I was like, well, damn, I don't know any Indigenous property developers, or I can't really think. I've been to most Indigenous communities across Queensland, and I know a lot of people. I can't really think of anyone that is capable of even doing that. And I was like, well, why don't I just give it a crack?
Yeah.
And that's where the initial interest came from, which around real estate was the need for Indigenous home ownership. And that's when I was like, well, before I even come back here and do the important work that needs to be done in Indigenous Australia, I need to go out and cut my teeth in the real world. But I need to know how developers do it in the real world. You know, so then I can transfer those skills back here and apply it to this context.
Yeah.
And that's where that interest came from and that desire. And that led me on a 6-7 year path to where I am now. And the buyer's agent, you know, game that I'm in now is just part of the process of one day becoming a developer and building the expertise and the resources I need to one day solve the, you know, what's really close to my heart, which is the Indigenous ownership.
I love that vision, mate. So let's get nitty gritty on your personal property journey so far. And again, it's early in the scheme of things. And I'd like you to start with, you know, what, if any, initial fears you had around purchasing property yourself. And how did you overcome those? Because a lot of Australians want to get into property, but are too scared to jump off the cliff. So can you share, sort of think back to what were you thinking and feeling at that time and take us through that?
Yeah, my biggest fear, Bushy, was when I started my journey was the unknown. You know, and it was more or less around, like, I didn't know everything I needed to, I suppose, right? I didn't know everything about the marketplace. I didn't know everything about real estate. And it was that fear of the unknown that really placed an element of doubt in my head around, you know, is this even right for me? Should I even do this?
Yeah.
Is there a payoff in the end? And if I were to go on this path and how I think I overcome that, the fear of the unknown, was that I made sure I did everything I could to control the outcome. You know, I made calculated risks. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I looked at things because I heard Ray Dalio one day say, you need to look at your investments from an asymmetrical point of view, right? Where the upside needs to be greater than the downside.
Yep.
And basically that's how I overcome that initial doubt. So having, you know, the fear of the unknown was just getting all the information I could about the marketplace, about real estate, and then stacking that information in my favor to then make an informed decision, you know, rather than make a decision from a place of fear, doubt, speculation. I was making a decision from an element of facts or a place of confidence and then using the information I had. And obviously I had some deficiencies in the information that I had. You know, a lot of data that's out there's lagging, it's old, you listen to different people's perspective as well. So not all of it's right, but I took what I could at the time and try and use it to make the best decision I could.
I love the way you're sort of value stacking on the positive side rather than let the negative sort of drown you in the process, which, you know, if people rely on the mainstream media, they just drown themselves in negativity and then wonder why they don't do anything. But by focusing in on people like Ray Dalio and the principles that he puts on the table around property and other allied players and getting into that mindset that enables you to say, oh, well, here it is. Other people have done it. I've got the confidence. Let's have a go. So talk us through what your personal property journey looks like to date in terms of the good and the bad and what you've learned from what you've done so far.
Well, the good and the bad, for me, the good is that I've got three properties under the portfolio at the moment, plus the PPR.
Yep.
So four in total. And they've all been good in their own right, you know, but they've all had, you know, some downside to them as well. And from a good perspective, you know, when I look back at those acquisitions that I've made, from a good perspective, you know, I can say they're all in really good locations, right?
Yep.
So that was a really big focus of mine, is getting that part of the process right, which was selecting the location. Location does 80% of the heavy lifting.
Yep.
And that was, I think, some of the good that came out of, you know, the existing properties that I have.
Yeah.
Some of the bad things is obviously just dealing with the day-to-day things of, you know, holding an investment property, you know, tenant disputes, maintenance wear and tear, unforeseen weather events that cause damage as well. So this is sort of the not-so-sexy side of asset ownership as well. It is the bad part of owning assets. But, you know, the upside, as I said before, is, I think, a lot better than the downside. But, yeah, I'm not going to certainly you know, be ignorant to the fact that there is no downside. And this is, you know, some of the bad things that, that come with, you know, having properties under your portfolio. And then the ugly side is, well, see, I haven't really, you know, come across the ugly just yet, like with the, like in my own existing journey. I've only been in the, one cycle now.
Yeah.
I've only been investing in the last 5 years. So I'm in the early stages of a cycle, right? When my properties are located. So if you ask me that question in another 10 years, I could probably have a lot of like potential value, but this stage I don't.
Well, what I love about what you've just shared as well is then, because I say this to people all the time, it's not a matter of if you're going to have a major issue with a property, it's a matter of when that occurs, and then planning for the worst and expecting the best and having contingencies in place to accommodate that when it does happen. Because as you and I both know, there's no such thing as a perfect property, and there's no such thing as a stress-free, no-issue journey in property. But if we've identified that there is going to be an issue at some point, we don't know when it is, no one knows when it is, and then we've at least got fallback plans to cover us in that, whether it be people, resources, or other, to make sure, then we're going in with the right expectations and not expecting a perfect trouble-free journey on the way, mate. So love you sharing that. If we sort of look back on your life so far, if you were starting out again, would you invest in anything differently, do you think?
I started out again. Well, see, my strategy, Bushy, was that I wanted to buy well-located properties that sat under their intrinsic value, that had renovation or development potential in the future.
Yeah.
So gave me multiple exit strategies as well. When it did come time to potentially liquidate those assets, I could develop them, I could renovate them, I could force value, I could manufacture equity and those sort of things. Yeah. But when I look back, the properties that I bought have all been put through that asset selection criteria, right?
Yeah.
Today, but when I look back at it now, I probably should have chucked in a smoky in there, and a smoky one's probably going to be my next purchase, right?
Yeah, okay.
One that isn't aligned with the same, doesn't have the same alignment to the ones that I already have, right?
Yeah.
So it is a lot different in terms of strategy. This one might just be a buy and hold, right? Just pure location focus, might even be negatively geared, but you know, doesn't have the multiple strategies around renovation, development. It's just a buy and hold. Right? Or I might look at throwing in a property that's just, you know, high cash flow, high yield, as opposed to, you know, just that one strategy. So I think what I need to do when I think about it now is diversify my strategy.
Got it.
Which is throw a couple of other different asset types into the portfolio and not sort of, just have my asset focused on one particular strategy and one particular asset type.
Love that. I love that, mate. And that's a great segue to sort of jump into your future vision of what your ideal lifestyle looks like and what investment strategy are you going to pursue to attain and maintain this long-term. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I mentioned, you know, one of the big things that I needed to do was build my capacity and capability and cut my teeth doing mainstream developments if I want to then take that back into doing the important work in Indigenous Australia, which is, you know, helping people, you know, get into home runs.
Yeah.
So that's why I acquired those properties that had that renovation development potential so I could cut my teeth on assets that I don't, right?
Yeah.
And do that. So I feel as though those assets are well positioned to get me to my end goal of becoming a developer or building my capability as a developer to then go on and solve all the problems that I want to solve in the marketplace. So those assets that I bought are aligned to my broader vision and goal was, which was learning in the game of development, cutting my teeth in development. They're not going to make me, you know, a multi-millionaire or billionaire, no, by all means, but I'm going to make money from them, you know, that's for sure. But at the same time, what I'm going to get is more important, which is the education that will come from, you know, adding value and doing those developments that I can then use to go on and do bigger and better things.
Yeah, I love it, mate. And I love that long-term vision of yours because I think there's a massive need there in what you've shared with us. and the self-determination that's going to come out of that will be awe-inspiring in terms of what it'll do for the people who are able to take advantage of that, mate. So I've got full respect and admiration for what you're doing. It's an area that hasn't really been touched. And again, like you touched on before, it's a whole topic on its own. But the welfare approach of governments in particular, and the fact that it's really crushed the ambition by creating generations of welfare dependent exercise. And again, I don't want to jump into this too much, but I did a lot of work in communities up in the Territory and in Western Australia during the days that I was an architect. And I was continuously frustrated by the drip feed that governments would put into communities that would enable them to be perceived as doing something without actually doing anything to really help the people and give them the opportunity that they needed to take control of their own lives. So, mate, I full respect for what you're doing in that regard. I know, having spent a bit of time with you already now, that you were just the person to make that happen and to do it well for everyone's benefit. So enjoy the fact that you're happy to share that with us now, mate. So, mate, what I now want to do is switch into what I affectionately call the ambush or the bushfire lightning round, which is where I ask you four fast questions that everyone wants to learn your thoughts on. And the first of those is a personal question, really. What's your favourite song and why?
Well, Bushy, the list is pretty big, but whenever someone asks me that, the first song that comes to mind is Neon Moon by Brooks and Dunn. It's a country song, you know, Neon Moon. The reason why that comes to mind is because Mum and Dad played that routinely on a Sunday afternoon when I was growing up.
Awesome.
And the reason why they played it routinely on a Sunday afternoon is because that's when they would do the spring clean of the house. And Mum, you know, the big country fan would play, you know, country music, Alan Jackson, George Strait,
yep.
Sandana. Neon Moon was always a favorite of mine. And to this day, you know, it is one when I go for a run, I'm listening to Brooks and Dunn, Neon Moon. When I'm in the gym, I'm listening to Neon Moon. When I drop my son off to school, we're blasting that song. And he's singing it now as a 7-year-old. So my favorite song to date. But I do have, you know, a lot of interest in other music genres, but country music is right up there for me.
What I love about music, Troyson, is that it takes us right back to a time and place. And so, you know, I've got a song list that if I want to be in a certain mood, then I'll put those songs in, because I know it's going to take me straight back then. And I can feel and remember vividly what was happening and how that continues to make me feel, mate. So love that you said that. Next question is a bit of a different angle. What superpower do you wish you had and why?
I wish I was a genius. By that I mean, like, I'd have the ability to solve the world's most complex problems, right? And provide the answers to the most existential questions, you know, that don't have answers to. So I wish that was my superpower, because that's one that would benefit everybody. It'd benefit mankind, it'll benefit the human race if someone solved humanity's problems, right, and have the level of genius to do so. So my superpower would be, I wish I was that genius.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's a massive responsibility that you'd have on your shoulders if you did have that ability. And if we look at the history of civilization to date, those that had put themselves in that position have often had a pretty challenging life as a consequence. Albert Einstein, classic example of that, I guess, in that sense. So love that. And on a similar topic, I guess, if you could have coffee or a drink with anyone, either alive or a dead historical figure, who would you choose and why, Joyce?
I'd choose Jesus.
Yep.
And the reason why I would is to ask those existential questions. Who is your father? Like, why this, why that? You know, what's the bigger picture here? Like, ask those really big existential questions, because sometimes, like, I'm a deep thinker. Was she?
I can see that. I
find myself going down these rabbit holes of looking at things from a world point of view or a universal point of view, not just sort of focusing on my own little bubble. I like to think big as well. And I think having sit down with Jesus will certainly be an interesting conversation. And I think one that will, fill that void, I suppose, in my mind.
Yeah. I love it. That's, absolutely spot on there. Now, the last question in this round, and you're going to get another chance in part two next week, Troyson, but what would be the title of the book that was written about you if your worst enemy wrote it? Now, I don't think you're going to have too many in these, but if your worst enemy wrote a book about you, what would the title be?
The title would be Arrogant and Had an Easy Life. And the reason why I say that, Bush, is because people, they only see what's on the outside. And they don't really see what's been done behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So they see that, I've got a nice house, I've got all these properties, I've got a nice car, I've got a successful business. But they don't realize, the work that I've done behind the scenes to become the person that has all those things, right? What does it be do have? I've become the person, I've done the things, I've done those things. Now I have those things. Whereas people, they just want to have things without becoming the person, without doing the thing, to have the thing that they desire, right?
Yeah.
So I think my book would be, Arrogant and Had an Easy Life, but they wouldn't know that I've been like a duck with his feet underwater going like this, paddling along.
But 100%.
Smooth as anything, but underneath the water, the legs are going like crazy.
I 100% agree. And you and I spoke in the green room about luck, because I've had the same comment for many years, Troyson. It's all right for you, Bushy, you're lucky. No, I'm not lucky. I've worked 10 times harder than you, and I continue to work 10 times harder than you. And it's when hard work meets opportunity that you can classify it as luck. I know for sure, and I can tell from what you've shared with us already, how hard you work and how hard you continue to work on both yourself and everything you do to advance that. And I think, that's of great inspiration to those that are listening in, because it doesn't matter what circumstance you're in or what situation you find yourself in, if your mindset's right, your approach is right, and you're prepared to do the hard work and develop the habits and the daily disciplines that are going to take you from where you are to the vision, the clear vision of where you want to be. And again, what I love about what you've said, you've got that creative spirit and that very clear vision of where you're heading becomes both the magnet and the compass that's going to enable you to go through all of the inevitable speed humps along the way to get there. But it's also guiding you, because every decision that you're making, and as you've shared with us again today, is based on, is what I'm doing now going to take me closer to or further away and where I want to end up? So, mate, absolute gold in what you've shared. I really want to thank you for taking the time to share the ins and outs of your personal journey so far. And while we're talking about it, if anyone listening in would like to ask Troyson or any other property professionals any further questions on the property approach and approach to life generally, or you'd like to discuss anything we chatted about with other like-minded investors in a very safe, relaxed and no-pressure environment, I want to encourage you to join us on the Facebook site at the Property Hub Collective, which you can click on the link in the show notes. And we look forward to connecting with you and continuing the conversation there. And we now look forward to continuing our deep dive with you, Troyson, in next week's episode, where we're going to unpack the pros and cons of buying property in regional versus city locations, and regional Queensland in particular, alongside the ins and outs of buyer's agents, the good and bad. So remember to always get invested. And we look forward to talking to you with you again then, Troyson.
Thanks for having me. We'll look forward to catching up again soon.
Stay tuned for part two of this interview next episode.
Thanks for tuning in to Get Invested on the Property Hub podcast channel, your home for property investment insights and inspiration. And don't leave yet. until you've taken the next step towards living by design. By getting my award-winning book, Get Invested, absolutely free when you sign up at knowhowproperty.com.au or bushymartin.com.au. And finally, make sure you subscribe to Property Hub to get your weekly dose of Get Invested inspiration along with every episode of Realty Talk, Australia's leading property show for red-hot property investing news and insights direct from industry leaders and influencers. Remember to always get invested in your knowledge, and I look forward to seeing you next time.